Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Mraz. Today's show was fuller than me after an NFL Sunday. Enjoy the takes and laughs in the best of the DA show.
Rays and Dodgers, this is the way that it was intended. These are the two best teams over the course of this season in baseball. They are two of the best stories as well. For the Tampa Bay Rays, the third lowest payroll in baseball, just $28 million, already slaying the Giants when it comes to the Yankees of the ALDS and the Astros of the ALCS. Those are big market, big payroll teams with playoff experience and stars all over the roster. And the Rays were able to outlast them despite having nobody, almost anybody, could name if you had them in a police lineup. So already the Rays just getting to this point in time, their first World Series appearance since 2008, only their second World Series appearance ever, is an amazing story. On the Dodger side of things, this has been a never-ending quest for that title, their first since 1988. Once upon a time, the Dodgers were in the World Series consistently. And once upon a time, they won World Series consistently. Once they moved from Brooklyn to Los Angeles in the late 50s, the 60s were dominated by Sandy Koufax and Don Drysdale. By the time we get to the 70s, again, it's a dynamic team. The Steve Garvey-led teams under Tommy Lasorda. They're in the World Series multiple times against the Yankees late 70s. They finally break through and win the World Series in 81. They get back there in 88, the Kirk Gibson World Series. And again, baseball just is normalized when the Dodgers are winning titles, but they haven't done so since 88. And so here are the Dodgers with all of these playoff demons and all of these October ghosts down 3-1 against the Braves of the NLCS, and all seems lost. That once again, it was going to be an upset, a disappointment, a frustration, a point of contention after they ensuingly got eliminated by the Braves. And yet something crazy happened. Dodgers, who have been known as a big market, big payroll team, but doesn't have the guts in October, found the guts. And they come roaring back from down 3-1 to take the World Series in a crazy game number 7. And so here we are, Rays and Dodgers. So who draws first blood? You had Clayton Kershaw on the hill last night, and Kershaw has already been victim to his own playoff demons throughout his career. In game number 1, with a chance to set the tone, would Clayton Kershaw do so? He would. And for a Dodgers offense that is phenomenal, but has at times fallen asleep in big spots, would they rise to the occasion? They would. And after an 8-3 game one victory last night for the Dodgers, a night where everything went right for LA and not much went right for the Rays, are we looking at a situation where the Rays are just outclassed by the Dodgers? It is where we begin your cold open.
Mookie Betts, first pitch with a fly ball to right field. Heading on back is Renfro at the wall, and it's gone! A home run! Mookie Betts is doing merely everything. A home run, two stolen bases, couple of runs scored, and on the first pitch of the bottom of the sixth, he hits a home run to right.
We got a lot of guys doing special things right now. You know, Belly, obviously, Will with big hits, JT, obviously, what does what he does, Muntz, Jock, yeah, all the way down. It's just, I didn't even say Seager, you know, so it's just like, It's just a special team. It is.
I don't believe it.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heart-rending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
That was Charlie Steiner on Dodgers Radio with the Mookie Betts home run. That was Clayton Kershaw after the win last night. Dodgers take game number one, as I mentioned, 8-3. A couple of big takeaways from last night's game. It's been a long time, it has at least felt like, since Kershaw had a real defining, positively, October moment. And last night, the Dodgers needed a big start from him. They needed a quality start from him, and they got it. Six innings, two hits given up, only one run allowed with eight strikeouts and one walk. Kershaw was phenomenal. And I would say this, the only problem I had with Dave Roberts and Clayton Kershaw last night was that I thought that Dave Roberts gave Kershaw the hook too early. Because after that, the suspect Dodgers bullpen scuffled a little bit. But for Kershaw, he still had plenty left in the tank. He had only thrown 78 pitches. I know that Dave Roberts wanted to take him out on a high note, and I know that the Dodgers had built a big lead, so I think it was, hey, let's just not let this get into a danger zone. But Kershaw had more left, and Kershaw gave you six strong, strong innings, and you got to give Kershaw a major tip of the cap here because he has been sliced and diced by everybody in his October starts, including in the LCS, and last night he was very, very good in that spot. Also, you have Bellinger, who hits another home run and robs a home run at the wall, a big play defensively after his huge home run in the LCS game number 7, and he had popped his shoulder out of whack, out of the socket, had to be popped back in. I guess that shoulder's okay, huh? He comes back in game number 1, home run and a big defensive play, so that's huge for the Dodgers because he's part of those that amazing lineup with all those big young bats. And as for Mookie Betts last night, Betts' home run actually wasn't his greatest play on the night. His greatest play of the night was actually on the base paths because he gets on base, he steals second base, he steals third base, and then takes home on a throw that's a little late and a little high, all based on his legs, his agility, his athleticism. This is why Mookie Betts is one of the two best players in baseball. This is why the Red Sox brass was crazy not to give him the cash he wanted whenever he wanted it. Because when Betts does things like that, he affects the game on so many levels. He affects the game defensively. He affects the game at the plate. He affects the game on the base paths. He does everything. And last night, the Dodgers got a win in game one because of their stars, Kershaw and Betts. Which brings us to the Rays. Does it look like the Rays are going to be outclassed in this series? I'm not ready to say that yet. Tampa Bay has been the best team in the American League all season long. I'm not ready after one game to suddenly seize on this and say, see, Tampa Bay can't do it. I like the Rays story. I love the Rays lineup. I like how they're put together and they're built. They don't have the star power. They don't have the big payroll. They don't have the big name that the Dodgers do. But I expect the Rays to perform better than they did last night. And I was surprised last night that they didn't get a better effort out of Glasnow, because Tyler Glasnow is one of their really top young pitchers. He was really, really good all season long, and last night just really didn't have it. Now, credit the Dodgers' approach to the plate, credit the Dodgers' lineup, but I expect the Rays to have better pitching than they did last night. They're not going to give up eight runs again. I bet you for the rest of the series, they do not give up that many runs again. I absolutely believe that the Rays can be back into this series as early as tonight in game number 2. Here's your phone number, 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Or on Twitter, hit me up, DA on CBS. Your thoughts on World Series game number 1. Mraz, when you were watching this game last night, did you feel like, uh-oh, Rays are outclassed in this series?
They're not outclassed in the series, but you saw the recipe for beating the Rays, and that is you can't fall behind them. The moment Glasnow makes that pitch to Bellinger in the fourth and he smashes it to right field and the Dodgers have a 2-0 lead, that's uh-oh time for the Rays. The Rays with that bullpen need to play from ahead. And if they only answer like they did with Kiermaier's homer for a solo homer, the bottom of the fourth, and they only chip away at one, they're already in quicksand there. Because of their bullpen and because of how dominant or how much, you know, lengthier the Dodgers lineup is than the Rays lineup, the Rays need to score first in these games and get that mental game going with the Dodgers that, uh-oh, how many outs are they going to get out of their bullpen here? Because they have such an extreme advantage with their pen. It's all about scoring first. It sounds so cliche, but it is so true and it is so evident that that's what the Rays need to do. And I think they're going to have a couple cracks at that. Look at tonight when they face essentially a bullpen game.
Yep, I agree with all of that, and I think also the mental game for the Rays is not only putting the Dodgers on their heels from a deficit standpoint, but also letting the Dodgers think about all of those big losses they've had in the World Series and in October big games. I mean, Los Angeles has never closed the deal, not with this team. They haven't in 32 years. So if the Rays can put pressure on the Dodgers, get late into games with a lead, put some doubt into the Dodgers' heads, it has to raise some of those old memories, especially if you take one or two games and suddenly you have a 2-1 series or something like that, and the Dodgers have to answer those questions about, uh-oh, is this here we go again? So it's a big deal for the Rays to put pressure on the Dodgers. They did not do so last night. Credit the Dodgers for getting game number one in a laugher 8-3. Well,
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
DA, they can fire you, but they can't eat you. Just remember that. Welcome back, everybody. You can listen to the podcast form of the DA Show whenever you want. Listen to us by simply going to your favorite podcast platform, searching The DA Show, subscribe. That way you get automatic uploads of all of our episodes. Plus, then you can rate and review them if you have the time. That helps other people find the podcast as well. Let's start in Big D with Jerry Jones. This one's getting ugly early. We'll give you an update on where the Cowboys are after we hear this clip from Jerry Jones on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, our CBS Sports Radio affiliate there, with Sean and RJ as he discusses his quarterback, Andy Dalton.
If you ask me, do I have confidence in Andy Dalton being able to come in here and us have winning football on the Cowboys? I do at that position. He's going to be challenged. I wish we had better shape protection-wise there with him. I wish we had and can get going with a better running game.
I do. I like how Jerry said it almost French there. Do I have confidence in Andy Dalton? I did. I did as well. I think that last game out for the Cowboys, they messed all over the carpet. If they were a pet doggy, they messed all over the carpet.
I do.
Ezekiel Elliott now has 5 fumbles on the season. That's almost one per game. He had 2 of them that set up short fields for the Cardinals in this game. The Cardinals, against that Swiss cheese Cowboys defense, was able to convert those into touchdowns. Then the pass rush was able to get to Andy Dalton regularly, and Zach Martin goes out with a concussion, one of the most important pieces on that offensive line. Combine that with a Michael Gallup drop in the end zone, and do I think that the Cowboys can play better than they did on Sunday night? I do. Now,
I do.
Do I have confidence that the Cowboys are going to right this ship? No, not really, because I don't trust Mike McCarthy, and I don't trust Mike Nolan, and I don't trust this defense. But do I think that Andy Dalton is better than what we've seen, at least through the game and a half that he's been in there? I do. I do think that the Dalton isn't this bad. Okay, now, if they protect him better, and they don't fumble the football in front of him, and the defense is giving up 3s instead of 7s, Dalton can be better. Once Dalton gets behind by 21 points, forget it. It's game, set, match. You're not going to come back with Dalton down 21 points. But can the Cowboys play better than they did Sunday? Yeah. And do I think that this division is still up in the air? I do. I don't think that by any shape, I don't think there's any way the Cowboys aren't still in this division. I mean, they're 2-4, for crying out loud. That's the best record of the division at this point in time. Now, there were reports yesterday by Jane Slater, NFL Network, that there's dissension building already within the locker room, and that players are saying these coaches don't know what they're doing. Quote, they're bad at their job.
Losing.
And that's distinctly possible. You know, Mike McCarthy spent the last year and a half after he got fired in Green Bay sitting in a basement full of retirees going over film. And, you know, who knows? Maybe that was essentially like the Bears fans, you know, a bunch of fat guys sitting around the basement eating sausages, watching football, thinking that they could now coach. That doesn't seem so smart right now, because McCarthy is clearly at a loss. And Mike Nolan, oh my God, that defense is so bad. Here is Nick Foles as the Bears are the worst 5-1 ever.
We're not going to get complacent and say, hey, man, we're 5-1. This is it. No, like we're sitting there in the locker room after the game talking through it. Hey, we got to be better here. This is what we got to do here. Communication here, route running here. Hey, we got to be able to run the ball here. We know that. I know y'all are going to ask those questions. We know that. And that's what's exciting, because we don't have to have y'all say, like, hey, you doing this? Hey, we know. But we also know that we're going to improve because we believe in one another. And that's what great teams do. Great teams find a way to win a game. Bad teams win with prettiness. Great teams win no matter how it takes. So I'm proud of our guys. I think we're continuing to improve. Are we where we want to be? No, we're not where we want to be. But I'm excited about our offense.
You know, Nick Foles is better when he's not talking. Nick Foles. I know you got the MVP of that Super Bowl. I know you got that big fat ring and that statue outside of Lincoln Financial Field, but just tone it down just a hair there, just a notch. Look, here's the problem with the Bears. They've beaten one good team. One good team. They beat the Lions in that comeback led by Mitchell Trubisky, which meant so much to Matt Nagy. He benched Trubisky. They beat the Giants. Who cares? They beat the Falcons in another comeback. Remember, that was basically the game that essentially got Dan Quinn fired. It happened again to the Falcons, but that was the beginning of the end for Dan Quinn. Then they lost to the Colts. They beat the Buccaneers in that ugly Thursday night game, but that's the only good win they have. Then last week, they beat the Panthers. I know the Panthers have been a cute story. The Panthers are not a good team. They're a fine competitive team. They're fine. They're average. They're not a good team. They're not a playoff team. So the Bears might be 5-1, but they've beaten one playoff caliber team right now, and that's the problem. They get the Rams coming up next, which that's a good test. Then they get the Saints after that. Then they get the Titans after that. And they have the Packers 2 weeks after that. So four of their next five matchups are against playoff caliber teams: Rams, Saints, Titans, and Packers. Not only would it not surprise me if the Bears aren't even 3-1 in this, it wouldn't surprise me if they're not 2-2 in this. It would not surprise me if they are 0-4 or 1-3 once they get through these four teams.
No.
No! It's like Mraz talking about Eli. No!
No.
No, Eli. Don't do that on the router. No!
No.
And here's Jeff Luhnow, who is the former GM of the Astros, during their cheating scandal via KPRC television in Houston.
I didn't know we were cheating. I had no idea. I wasn't involved. Major League Baseball's report stated that I didn't know anything about the trash can banging scheme. They stated I might have known something about the video decoding scheme and not paid it much attention, but there was really no credible evidence of that claim. I didn't know. I didn't know about either of them. And it felt like on that day that I was getting punished for something that I didn't do. And it didn't feel right.
Okay, I just want to raise this Exhibit A for the court. There is evidence, including text messages and emails, of Luhnow's staff reporting to Lunau about the computer system named Codebreaker. There was a computer system in place in Houston, which Lunau got direct reports on, called Codebreaker. You know, I wonder how this possibly could have happened in Houston. The GM says it wasn't his fault. The owner says he shouldn't be held accountable. And their best player, Jose Altuve, before the season says we're going to get to the World Series anyway. Sounds like tons of accountability around Houston, huh? Boy, that Astros organization, oof, boy, they're all in this thing together, huh? I mean, that's the thing, is that the Astros not only obviously cheated and obviously a step too far, but they were just the worst at owning it and still are. And we can all take our shots at Rob Manfred, and we do and we should. But I thought Manfred had a pretty good facial yesterday. When Lunau had this quote, Manfred was asked to respond, and Manfred said, number one, he's citing the text messages that we investigated. There was way more than just the text messages. And he said, and also, I sent the directive out to all GMs. If you're caught after the Apple Watch situation, it falls on the GM because you need to have control of the organization. So Manfred said, even if Lunau said he doesn't know, it doesn't matter. He still was going to be held responsible for his organization. Yeah, sorry. Checkmate, Jeff. That's your sound check. I mean, pick your poison here, Mraz, in these three sound bites. But let's start with Nick Foles. I know they're 5-1, but Foles is getting a little saucy, don't you think?
Oh. No! Relax. Does that sound like a quarterback that's actually confident? Does that sound like a quarterback that's extremely nervous? You're all going to realize they stink. You know, we know what you guys are going to say, so of course
we're
not complacent.
We know you think we stink.
We understand. No. And it's not we think. We understand you do stink, and you know you stink. You don't have to get all hot and bothered. We understand the record doesn't reflect it, and you know that. We get it. Bump the brakes.
On those four potential playoff teams, what do you think their record is after those four? In those four games?
1-3.
You think they beat either the Saints or the Packers or the Rams or the Titans?
Yes, I think they will find a way to win one game. It could be this weekend versus the Rams. It very well could be. I think if I had to guess, my prediction for the upset special would probably be the Saints, because I think their pass rush can, you know, fluster Drew Brees, who this year, when he's had to face a big pass rush, has looked a little flustered. But I think they will find a way, because I'm saying they stink. They're not the NFC East stink. So I do think in the NFL, you know, you give them four cracks at really good teams, they're going to find a way to win one of these games.
1-3, I think, is best case scenario. They're not going 2-2 against those teams.
I would agree.
Not going 2-2. Now, they don't have to go, you know, 3-1 or 4-0, because they get the Vikings still twice. They get the Lions one more time. They get the Texans and the Jaguars. So the Bears' schedule shapes up, as we've joked about, very pretty for a 10-6 wild card weekend at the NFC East winner. That feels like where the Bears' season's going to go. And you know what? They might end up winning that first playoff game. Now,
yeah, well, imagine could it's Foles versus Wentz and Eagles.
Could definitely be. Now, it could also be the NFC West's second team that goes on the road. Could be the Cardinals, could be the Rams. If the Seahawks win the division going on the road, I suppose it could be the Niners to the NFC East as well. But the Bears are going to end up likely in that 9 or 10 win range, maybe even 10 or 11 wins, because their schedule breaks pretty good for them. And they're going to end up on the road in the playoffs with a chance to win against a mediocre foe in the NFC East, if that's who they pull.
We're looking for a double doink there. How great would that be again?
But they're going to get smashed when they play a good team in the divisional round.
Of course they are.
Next up, okay, in the sound check. I mean, that last soundbite is just amazing as well from Jeff Lunau. I mean, if you're the Astros, I know that Lunau wants to work again in baseball, but I mean, my God, can anybody in that organization take responsibility? Who the hell yet has said, yeah, you know what? My bad. Nobody.
It's so bizarre, because all you have to do very early on is say, I would even finger point, say, hey, yeah, I was aware we were doing it. In hindsight, I guess I wish we handled it better. Every team's looking for an edge. Maybe we took an edge too far. If you say anything like that, it's kind of like any of the steroid PED guys in baseball that have admitted it and whether whatever road they wanted to go down, you kind of forget about it and don't crush them for it. It's those guys who
and
go
you
down.
And you can always line. Play the card, as you said, of, you know what, we felt like everybody was doing it. We just took it a level
yes.
too far. You can use that talking point, and a lot of people would agree with you, but what you can't do is continually deny that you did anything.
Right. And by the way, if he's worried about maybe not getting another job because he's aware of cheating, I mean, the first two names we're hearing every time we talk about a manager getting fired is Alex Cora and A.J. Hinch. Where are those guys going to end up? Lunau, just save face now and admit it. I don't know why do you have to keep going down with this ship. It's almost uncomfortable how bad a liar he is.
None of them can do it. Jim Crane couldn't do it. Jeff Lunau couldn't do it. The players couldn't do it. The manager couldn't do it. Remember, the manager said that it wasn't his fault. He didn't understand
right.
the scope of things. Nobody in the organization can own this. It's incredible.
It's ridiculous. You know what? Now in hindsight, thank goodness the Rays won, because all these players sitting there winning Correa, I saw you point, all these guys guaranteeing World Series, enough's enough. But do remember on Lunau, it is not a lie if you believe it.
It's true. It's time to ask the pros, where you, the listener, gets to ask a question, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply tweet at me, DA on CBS. Be listening later on to the show when we'll answer that question. Ask the pros, brought to you by O'Reilly. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. What?
Bogish, when I just delivered that line, gave the worst eye roll I've ever seen and thought I wasn't
Did
looking.
Did I?
Oh, man, I think Cap captured it. It was such a big eye roll because I gave you a good line about the not a lie if you believe it.
Or a bad line.
The George Costanza line.
Yeah, the George Costanza line. Why the eye roll, Bogues?
I don't remember eye rolling, but I also don't remember.
Now you're lying like Lunau?
No, I don't remember eye rolling. If I did, and that was my natural reactions, because as Pete said, I mean, you forced that one in there at the end. I don't know that worked as well as you think it did.
Andrew Bogish has our headlines this morning. AB, how annoying are the Astros, by the way?
See, this is the problem. I was entertained by it. I kind of wanted them to keep going because it was such ridiculousness from them. It's in particular acting the players like they were victims. They were somehow avenging themselves by having this run. It was entertaining to me, and I think baseball would have gotten a little juice that it normally doesn't get had they kept going. I mean, if they were in this World Series.
Well, Dodgers, Astros would have had a lot of juice, yes.
Right. I mean, that would have been a fairly remarkable story. And I, too, like, even if you go as far down the road as possible, had they won this whole thing this year, you can't forgive them in any way, but it would have been a completely unpredictable and confusing kind of bow on this entire story that they
right.
very quickly won one theoretically without cheating. So I was entertained by their kind of wrestling heel turn setup. So I'm a little disappointed that they're out right now.
Could you imagine, yeah, Astros Dodgers in this World Series, and if the Dodgers had lost again to the Astros, the Dodgers would have just walked off the Santa Monica Pier. Forget it. We're done here.
Inside, it's this date in mothership history.
Are you sensing a pattern? On this date 4 years ago, 2016, Mraz insisted, I'm gonna get healthy right after this football game. Let's roll the tape.
So I will set an alarm. I'm going to plan on setting it for 8:45 because I want to take care of my morning kind of body getting altered to the day.
Oh, what does that mean?
I have to go to the bathroom in
okay.
the morning. But usually that takes, a good 10 minutes before the body realizes I'm awake. Goes, all right, let's clean out the pipes here.
So starting out with the brunch, does that mean that will just begin your day of gluttonous eating? Or does that take over one of your game day meals?
Now, this is the plan going in. I am hoping that I upon the game ending at 12:30, instead of sitting on the couch or proceeding then to dip into lunch, that I actually go to the gym and watch. They have Red Zone.
Whoa!
Yes, they have Red Zone, CBS,
and
Fox.
NFL Sunday gym hit for you?
Just for an hour.
Never been done before.
Never been done. Never been done. But only because I know I'm going to eat a lot in the morning. So yeah, I'll watch the first quarters of the 1 o'clock doing cardio at the gym. Then come home, shower up. Maybe pick up maybe some crackers and cheese around 3 o'clock. And then the plan is, I believe, to go to the hollow grounds of Buffalo Wild Wings for the Steelers and the Patriots.
Let's call this as we see it. You ain't going to the gym.
Well, what's going to happen is if I end up having a couple mimosas and I'm in no position to work out.
More than likely, that hour at the gym is a nap until you go to the Buffalo Wild Wings.
It's totally fair. I mean, when the Jets and Ravens kick off, I might be out like a light.
This is great.
I got good intentions, though.
Yeah, good intentions. Hey.
So start with the first cinnamon bun down the chute. Next thing I know, I'm on the couch. Next thing I know, I got palm garlic going down the tubes. And who knows what happens when the Seahawks and Cardinals play.
For the record, that Ravens-Jets game that Mraz just referenced, Jets 24, Ravens 16, a shocking turn of events as Joe Flacco threw for 248, no touchdowns and two interceptions, but Ryan Fitzpatrick and Geno Smith were worse. Oh, man. Now, I don't know if you remember what exactly happened on this day, Mraz, but how many times in your life were you ever at the gym on a football Sunday?
I don't even know why I would say that, and I must have been in real desperate times as far as, you know, mentally looking at my stomach to even contemplate that. The idea of getting and doing some cardio, watching Red Zone on a 13-inch screen at the gym, what are you, nuts? No, you plant your fanny on the couch, and you sit there, and you enjoy yourself. And that's, I'm assuming, is what I did. Now, what I do find weird, I was doing brunch. I mean, who am I? What am I?
Yeah, I guess back in the day, 4 years ago, you were a little foo-foo doing brunch and thinking you're going to have a couple of mimosas and then go to the gym and work out.
What was wrong with me? No, just sit there and eat your wings.
I still ask that question. I don't know. I don't know where your delusion comes from so often. This is like when you said, I'm going to lose 100 pounds by Taylor's first birthday. It was so out of sight. It was such an unrealistic expectation that if you would have said, I'm going to lose 20 by then, okay, that's doable. You wouldn't have done it, but it's at least doable. Well, but when you said, I'm going to lose 100, I mean, it's so obvious you're not going to do so. It's the same as I'm going to go work out on an NFL Sunday.
You guys have to understand the psyche. If I say I'm going to lose 20 pounds in a year and then I don't lose the 20 pounds, I'll feel worse about myself. If I say I'm going to shoot for 100 pounds, but then I end up losing the 25 or 30, I'll say, okay, I didn't achieve my goal, but wow, I did do this. So if you make bigger goals that you know are harder to attain and you chip away at them, you're more likely to get to the original goal you could have set. I could write a book and speak on this.
Yeah, but the only problem is, how do you feel when you set the goal of losing 100 and you've gained 15?
Again, guys, we didn't know a pandemic was coming. We weren't prepared. If we weren't prepared here, how could I have been prepared and known? The gyms were shut down. That's everybody gained the quarantine 15. This is an unheard of weight gain year across the country that unfortunately just happened to coincide with a year I planned on losing 100.
You know, it's funny because some people would say, well, because of quarantine, I had more free time on my hands. Quarantine, I actually found more time in my schedule to go out and walk and to run and do push-ups and sit-ups and maybe buy a home gym system or buy a set of dumbbells for the house or just buy a treadmill or something. There's a lot of people that picked up physical fitness because of COVID, not the opposite.
Well, but when the gyms are shut down, there's only so much you could do from home, D.A. I went on a lot of runs, too, and I felt good about myself at times. But what you're not factoring in is there's more time to watch Netflix and all that other stuff. And what do? Your hands in a little bag of goldfish here. Your hands in a bag of salt and vinegar chips here. Ooh, the Oreos are here. There's more snacking. You're not on a routine where it's, okay, for breakfast, here I go. Here's my oatmeal. Now I'm too busy to even think about snacking. Here's my healthy lunch. That doesn't happen when you're home.
If COVID-19 had taken away pizza, buffalo chicken dip, and bagels, you still wouldn't have lost 100 pounds. There's no way. There is no way you're ever going to lose 100 in a year. You'll never lose 100 over the course of your life. I mean, no disrespect, but that's just not going to happen.
And that was the other thing. I was so big on supporting local businesses, all these restaurants and stuff like that. I couldn't let them go under. It's your duty. Chicken.
These are eye rolls, Sean, by the way. These are now eye rolls.
Yeah,
there was
the
not one
eye rolls.
The last segment, but these are eye rolls.
You guys just aren't being realistic. That's all. I got a new clock starting in January. Hopefully, you know, everything is normal.
Oh, okay. That's what it is now?
Let's go.
We've gone to so by our second birthday, we have 100 pounds.
Let's get to the terrible twos and be fit for them.
Okay. And you're going to start in January during the NFL playoffs.
Look, we've been down here. January, I'm just going to look to hover. I'm not going to look to make my move yet. I'm not going to pounce. That morning after the Super Bowl, that's where you pounce. I'm not going to be a sucker. French fried.
And then the first true March Madness that we would have had in 2 years, and you're going to sit that one out?
Well, no, because I'm supposed to go to my brother-in-law's bachelor party in Vegas the first weekend of March Madness.
Yeah, and the entire month.
Happens.
And then baseball season is going to come back, and they're going to allow fans back in the building, and you're not going to start getting into some Yankee games and running into a few chicken baskets?
And is Bob's Bar closing, and that you're not going to have this place to go and eat all day and drink all day?
Guys, I didn't say I'm going to shutter myself to nothing but salads and water, but there's ways to do this here. I don't need to do it 7 days
you
a week.
You haven't found any yet.
Yeah.
It must be nice to sit there with your size 32s. It must be so nice.
Don't deflect. You're the one that claimed you were going to lose 100 pounds by Taylor's first birthday.
I didn't wake up expecting to get attacked like this today. I didn't.
The Taylor's birthday is now like 60 days away, and you're not down 100. You're up 20.
I'm not up 20 anymore. I'm only up 4. I got this.
No.
Key Lardo, I've actually lost weight since early quarantine, so I'm chipping away.
Now, in Dallas, things have already turned. Jane Slater of the NFL Network is reporting that multiple players are questioning their coaches already. Now, note that the Dallas Cowboys are in first place in the division. They're 2-4. No other team in the division has 2 wins. And already the players are flipping on Mike McCarthy. Mike McCarthy's been there for a total of 6 NFL games. And already the players are saying things like, our coaches are not good at their jobs. Oy. This was relayed to Mike McCarthy. Here was Mike McCarthy's response yesterday in his press conference.
I've always stated this to every team that I've coached. I think it's important to handle things as men. I mean, if you do have something to say publicly that is of most importance, I think it's important to say it to the individual, particularly in a group dynamic setting.
Okay, I understand. I could see how you're saying, if you want to say something, bring it to me and we'll address it. I think that's fair. However, I think it's also fair that the players are looking at the head coach and wondering what the hell is going on. And here's why. Mike McCarthy has made multiple head-scratching play call decisions. Going for it on fourth downs, fake punts, questionable two-point conversions. It's as though Mike McCarthy told Jerry Jones, I'm going to be aggressive, and now has to hold himself to it every single time. Or that somehow Mike McCarthy thinks he's being compared to Jason Garrett's conservative play calling and now has to go for it every single time. Go for the gusto. Defensively, they're not getting any better, and that's also on Mike Nolan. I think they've got more talent than they're showing when it comes to this defense. I know the defense isn't as star-laden as we see on the offense, but they shouldn't be this bad. Do you realize they're one of the 5 or 6 worst scoring defenses in NFL history through 6 games? Through 6 games, You are comparing them to teams from the 40s, 50s, and 60s. Nobody in the modern era has given up this many points. They lost that opener against the Rams 20-17. That was the high watermark. They've given up in succession 39 to the Falcons, 38 to the Seahawks, 49 to the Browns, 34 to the Giants, and 38 to the Cardinals. Think about that. Since the opener against the Rams, they, quote, held the Giants to the best defensive effort, 34 points. By the way, the Giants never score 34 points. And the Giants had not one but two touchdowns called back because of penalties. Two! So you tell me, if you were to look at the last 5 weeks and you were on defense or on offense, a player in that locker room, could you look at your defensive effort and say, yeah, don't worry, our coaches will solve some problems here. I'm not here to absolve the blame of the players. Zeke is fumbling. The offensive line has injuries. There's drops from the wide receivers. The defense is losing players in the secondary. Yes, all of that is true. However, the defense as a unit's high water mark over the last 5 weeks was, quote, holding the Giants to 34 points. How can you not look at the coaches and say they don't get it? Because clearly Mike Nolan doesn't get it. And Mike McCarthy is apparently entrusted only with the offense and not the defense because he's not doing anything about it either. I don't blame these players for looking at Mike McCarthy right now and saying, does this guy really have it? He was out of work for a year and a half. Does this guy really have it? He was fired from his last job. Yeah, he has that Super Bowl ring. And he's got a lot of winning seasons with the Green Bay Packers. And yes, there was plenty of people that wanted to hire him across the NFL, and maybe he could pick and choose his landing spot. But today, that Super Bowl feels like a really long time ago. That Super Bowl was 10 years ago. So I think the issue here is McCarthy better get his players to avoid a mutiny here. And this is a good next game to do so. You get Washington this Sunday, and not only do you need to win this game, you need to win this game comfortably. If this is a nail-biter to the end, or God forbid they lose, he's going to have full mutiny. He's going to have full mutiny because they have to beat Washington. I haven't seen the spread on this yet. I would have to imagine it's the Cowboys by a touchdown or more. He cannot afford to lose this game. They lead the division at 2-4. There's still plenty to play for. They have two divisional games straight ahead, both winnable, Washington and Philly. All divisional games are winnable for the Cowboys in the NFC East. He has to be. He has to be. This is not an if. He has to be 4-4. He must win these two games. And he's got to beat Washington by two scores. Because if he's already getting the chirpy, our coaches don't know what they're doing, anonymous reports out there, it's only poised to get worse. It's only poised to get worse. It's not even Halloween yet. And if it's going to get worse, Mike's going to be one and done. Okay? Mike McCarthy's going to be one and done, and he'll never coach the NFL again in terms of head coaching. He'll be a coordinator somewhere, maybe a play caller. This, you don't get a third crack at being a head coach of the NFL if your second job ends in one season.
It's a pick 'em, DA, by the way. It's a pick 'em.
You got to be kidding me.
Nope. It's because of the Cowboys.
You got to be kidding me.
It's a pick 'em. As it stands this morning, it's a pick 'em. It's because of the Cowboys' offensive line, DA. They have no offensive linemen left. And Washington's defensive
goodness.
Front is their strength.
Oh, my goodness. The Cowboys are in a pick 'em with Washington. And Washington has already benched its starting quarterback. The Cowboys are in a pick'em with Kyle Allen. They're in a pick'em with Kyle Allen. This is the low point since 1-15 in 1989. This is the Cowboys' low point. This is it. They're in a pick'em game against Kyle Allen. Mraz, that's unacceptable.
It is, but DA, they have no offensive line left, and Andy Dalton playing behind no offensive line. What do you think is going to happen? Their defense stinks. It can't stop anybody. And now, offensively, they're playing with their backup quarterback, and as you just heard Bogus mention, they're going to be down to their third left tackle. Zach Martin got hurt last week. The strength of the Dallas Cowboys was always that offensive line. There's nobody left. Look around. It's that Will Smith gif. There's nobody left. There's nobody in the room for the offensive line. And the strength of Washington, if they do have one, is the fact that they actually have a pretty good defensive front. Andy Dalton's going to get abused on Sunday. Their only hope is the Cowboys give you a good defensive effort versus lousy offense. But do you have any confidence? You just read what they did versus the Giants' lousy offense.
Well, the only confidence may come from the fact that Washington's so threadbare of a roster. They're so bad that even the Cowboys down to that third string type of offensive line is still better top to bottom, which it is. That roster is still better top to bottom, even if you can't block anybody, than whatever Washington's going to throw out there on Sunday.
I agree, but again, it's playing into the strength of Washington. They could force some turnovers here. I mean, Andy Dalton looked like a deer in headlights versus Arizona. Washington's might have a better defensive front. Remember, Arizona's have Chandler Jones right now. It's the only strength Washington has going for it. Dalton could be forced to do a lot of turnovers on Sunday. This is no gimme. I would not expect to pick him. I'm a little stunned when I just saw that as well. But this is not an easy game with the way the Cowboys have played and what's happening with the Cowboy injury front right now for them at all.
So I think the Cowboys win this football game. I think that they have to win this football game because if the Cowboys lose to Washington, it's going to be a full-on revolt within that locker room. If they're already griping about how bad their coaches are, if they're already saying things like our coaches are bad at their jobs, if they lose to Washington, I don't care about the injuries, that locker room's going to, they're going to revolt. They're going to have a mutiny, right? I mean, they're going to turn on Mike McCarthy before Halloween fully if they lose to Washington.
Yeah. I mean, That's got it, because that's embarrassing if you're an NFL pro to lose to Washington right now. It is.
No question.
If you're Michael Gallup or Amari Cooper or Ezekiel Elliott, you can't be losing to Kyle Allen in Washington. You can't be. Like, that
no
is unacceptable.
Question. And if they lose to Washington, I mean, look, everything in the NFC East is basically a pick 'em these days. But if they lose to Washington, can they go on the road and beat Philly the following week? If they're bad enough to lose to Washington to fall to 2-5, are they going to go 0-2 on this little NFC East road trip? After that, they get the Steelers? I mean, if they lose to Washington on Sunday, 2-5 becomes 2-7. I mean, in 2-7, again, nothing in the NFC East is ever over, but 2-7 feels like season's over by November the 8th.
It is tough sledding. And by the way, this will be the same game on Thanksgiving as well. Just to give you a heads up, if you had Thanksgiving plans.
Oh, no, this is our Thanksgiving game?
DA, you're back-to-back doubleheader right now. Texans at Lions.
Oh,
Washington
no.
at Dallas.
Oh, no. We get Texans-Lions? Oh.
So just when you thought maybe finally we could truly celebrate a holiday, you're going to have a virtual parade in the morning. It's Texans-Lions, Washington at Dallas. The only kicker is you do get Ravens-Steelers at night. But that is a brutal Thanksgiving day.
That's the worst Thanksgiving ever. We have a virtual Macy's Day parade into two total stinkers.
And I hate to break it to you. Apparently, I just found out last night the Peanuts aren't even going to be aired on network TV anymore with their holiday specials. That's out this year.
Why is that?
Because they signed an exclusive deal with, I believe, Apple TV, and it's only going to stream only.
Know.
So now this year, no Peanuts around the holidays, no Thanksgiving parade, no Willard cutting it with the turkey knife. And now we get the Texans and Lions, and we get Washington and Dallas. Hope you enjoy your turkey, folks.
Okay, number one, I find the Peanuts to be remarkably depressing anyway around the
So dull.
JJ After Dark, John Jastrzemski, loves Peanuts. I mean, loves them. Has t-shirts and ball caps and backpacks and golf sweaters and all types of things about the Peanuts, and I just don't get it. They are the most depressing cartoon I've ever watched. I grew up with Looney Tunes where people, you know, they just tried to blow each other up. I mean, I grew up with, you know, Bugs Bunny trying to kill Elmer Fudd, who's trying to kill Bugs Bunny, who's trying to kill Daffy Duck, and Wile E. Coyote getting blown up and pushed over edges. And then I turn on Peanuts Around the Holidays, and it's this dreary music, and no trees have any leaves on them, and Snoopy is dragging his ass up around the yard, and Linus stinks, and the kid Pigpen has all the flies around, and I'm like, this is the most depressing thing ever. I can't understand the teacher. Wah, 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 wah. Oh, Charlie Brown, we're going to pull the football away from him. Everybody hates Charlie Brown. I'm like, this is supposed to be a kid's TV show? This is a cartoon? Give me Elmer Fudd getting a gun blown up in his face. I mean, give me a break. And so, frankly, to make my Thanksgiving less depressing when it comes to Texans and Lions and Washington, Dallas, it's good that there's no peanuts around my house. I'm glad I don't have Apple TV, so I don't have to be subjected to the depression that is the peanuts on Thanksgiving around the holidays.
It's accurate, right? The color is so dreary. The storyline never makes any sense. All right, so we found a win for you on Thanksgiving. It's no more peanuts on network TV. You'll live with Deshaun Watson versus Matt Stafford for nothing as long as you don't have the peanuts.
But that means that for the first 6 hours of football on Thanksgiving, we have zero playoff teams.
Well, you could have an NFC East, you know, title clash going on.
Which is, again, more depressing than the peanuts is that it's going to be 2-7 Washington against 3-7 Dallas, and that's going to be for first place at the NFC East.
Do you think Mike McCarthy thought twice about taking the Dallas job because he's such a food guy and didn't want to have to work on Thanksgiving? That should be the poll question.
I think Mike had to be convinced by Jerry, don't worry, we never play the late game, so you always have a spot for dinner after the game. We always play at home too, Mike, so don't worry. You can get home for dinner by about 7 or 8 o'clock every year. Fear not.
Do you think Mike McCarthy's at a coaching disadvantage on Thanksgiving because all he's thinking about is gravy and whatever bread's on the table and not the play calling?
Yeah, I think he is. And I think that we touched on this a couple of weeks ago, whether Mike McCarthy was an all-time fat head coach in NFL history, and I had said no. The more that I study the film on this, the more that I think that you are right, that he is a top five fattest NFL head coach in history. He's so rotund. He's built like a walnut. He's just one, he's just one big round thing. I mean, there's no neck. There's no shoulders. He's just flat round.
So, you know, when we went to do Swing or Miss, you had Swamp Thing as something. I think Mike McCarthy now should just be Round Thing. He's just
Round Thing. You know those Cheez-It commercials where they interview the cheese wheels?
He's not mature enough yet.
He looks like a cheese wheel. He's so wide.
So he turned into a Wisconsin cheese wheel while coaching the Packers.
Yes. Oh, I can't believe Thanksgiving is Texans Lions. And then Washington, Dallas. Oh, God. Now, the late game's good, but that means all of us have to stay sober and awake for the late game, which is always a challenge.
No question. I always have stuffing hanging out of my face. That's the sandwich game always because you make the sandwich and you eat it. But yeah.
Look, the good news is with the pandemic, it's an easy out from getting away from my extended family, who at this point I really can't stand. So... if it provided a decent out right now, like, you know what? We've got to be kind of safe, socially distanced, got some older people in the family. We don't want to put anybody at risk here. We don't know where everybody's been. Why don't we just do Thanksgiving on our own this year? So that's a big win because usually by 4 or 5 o'clock, I'm like, pass the wine, pass the beer. I can't take these people anymore. So I guess I'm in a catbird seat to stay sober enough to watch the late game. But geez, I mean, if I had to deal with those two early games and my extended family, oh God, oh, torturous.
And I am working Black Friday morning here on the DA show. So, you know, I'll be here to recap it all, DA.
So I'm off on Friday. So you're hosting Black Friday?
I stepped up to the plate. I said, I'll make sure somebody's here to handle Ravens Steelers. But could you imagine me now, 6 a.m. after watching those games, and we've seen what could happen to me on a football Sunday dealing with that? Now I got to roll in here, maybe voice cracking a little bit.
Well, I wonder, because you knew coming into this past Monday or two Mondays ago that you had me as the security blanket, so you can really let loose and let her rip. If you had to host, I don't think you would go that hard. I think you'd be paranoid.
Also, I got to step up and admit here, I mean, maybe we spent a little too much time on Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving, not the biggest drinking holiday for me. I got to leave as much room as possible to stuff as much food in my face. Huh. So the real question is, how much am I sweating at 6 a.m.? And I basically have that feeling underneath your armpit where your moob has come out the side a little bit, and then your arm doesn't plant right on it. That's kind of what's going to be happening for me as I fire up the DA show on Black Friday morning.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
With bacon. So last Wednesday, a ring-tailed lemur was stolen from the San Francisco Zoo. Luckily, it was found the very next day with the help of a 5-year-old boy. James Trin had just left his preschool when he spotted the animal and yelled, "There's a lemur." He didn't know it was the missing lemur, but his excitement got the attention of his teachers, who first thought the animal might have been a raccoon. The lemur hung out in a playhouse until officials arrived and got it back to the zoo. Now, the lemur had apparently gotten away from or was set free by the man who allegedly stole it. Corey McGilloway has been arrested, charged with burglary and grand theft of an animal. But I bring this up, DA, because of the luck of this lemur. Mm-hmm. Had it crossed paths with a 5-year-old Sean Marash, Sean might have yelled, "Look, a cow." And no one would have seen a cow, patted him on the head, and the lemur would have stayed out of the zoo in danger. But luckily, this 5-year-old boy had proper animal training, knew it was a lemur, was excited to see one in the playground. And now this lemur, who, by the way, is 21 years old, has arthritis, other medical conditions, is back in the zoo getting all of the treatment and rehab and medicine that he needs to be okay.
America is wonderful at times, and this is one of the reasons. At 5 years old, there's no way I would know what a lemur was, and I know Mraz wouldn't know what a lemur was.
If Mraz
even said raccoon, it would have been a win. And yet, this 5-year-old says lemur. So that just goes to show you what San Francisco preschool education is versus West Babylon high school education is. It's a much higher level in the Bay Area. Number two, I'd like to know why they arrested that dude McGillicuddy or whatever, because there's no explanation in the article why he was the suspect. What evidence did they have that he was the guy? How do they track him down? Because the lemur was just on the loose in a playground. And so why would McGillicuddy steal the lemur and then let it go? That's bizarre. Number three, it's such a weird anecdote or addendum to the story that they're just like, yeah, and by the way, he's got arthritis. The lemur's got arthritis? How do you even know a lemur has arthritis? And what exactly does that mean for this story? Did McGillicuddy give away the lemur because the lemur couldn't run as fast as he wanted? Was he like, oh, man, I got a bum lemur? You know, like what?
He put the lemur through a combine. He was like, oh, you're 40 times terrible.
Yeah,
you're out.
Exactly.
The lemur got the same hip replacement surgery Schwartz got.
Or Tua, but Tua rebounded quicker. And then also, this lemur, you know how sometimes pets start looking like their owners or maybe vice versa? The picture of this lemur looks like an old man who has arthritis. This guy's got like the tufts of hair coming out of his ears. He's got the big eyes, like, what are you going to do to me? He's got the droopy face, like he's just waiting for pudding. He looks like an arthritic old guy in some type of old
person's
home.
I want to call him Morty.
Yeah, he looks like a Morty the lemur.
Yep.
So it's great that we found the lemur. It's great that a 5-year-old identified him. But there's so many other questions I have about this.
So there is one sentence in there that they have not given us any details on how they knew this guy took it or how they tracked him down, because it's an ongoing investigation. I don't know if there's a bigger like lemur stealing ring here that they're trying to break, and he's the first kind of, you know, the first thing they're pulling out of the circle here to try and get him to rat up the chain. But we apparently, maybe if I pay attention, we'll have some future details down the road on this.
The lemur is making that same face we all make if you don't lock that stall proper enough in the bathroom publicly and somebody swings it open.
Yeah.
That frozen
devastating
look of, oh, no, you got me. Shut the door. That's the
lock
face.
Broke. San Francisco Zoo director Tanya Peterson said that the lemur named Maki was an aging wild animal who needed special care for ailments, including arthritis. Quote, he's still agitated, dehydrated, and hungry. So he sounds exactly like my dad. How do you know the lemur is agitated and dehydrated and hungry? Morty the lemur, he's just like, get me my worms. What does even a lemur eat?
The grass? I don't know. Bugs?
Fruit and veggies. You guys got to watch more Nat Geo Wild, man. There's a bazillion behind-the-scenes zoo shows on there with multiple arthritic animals who they take care of until their dying day.
Boy, sounds like a fun TV night in the Bogus House.
This guy tried to steal me. I didn't get my banana for the day. My arthritis is kicking up. Somebody bring me back to the zoo already. Sorry, Morty the lemur. We know you're hungry. We know you're agitated. I mean, I've been out all day. Why didn't anybody find me before the five-year-old kid did? Get me back home to the zoo. Sorry, so now, Morty.
So now Morty the lemur sounds like Pilates when we have to break.
Morty. The DA show's breaking late. I'm sick of this show. They're talking about farts. 40 minutes?
No!
Can they get back to sports? There's football going on. I mean, for crying out loud, the Pac-12 is going to start up here in a few weeks. Where's that?
Was it your producer?
Instead of 22 minutes on eating dog poop? I mean, really? Come on, guys. What's the deal with Entercom's computer system? It's down again?
Okay, but seriously, go to break. It's late.
Does Pete have to do everything around here?
Tell me about it.
Get me back to the zoo. Crying out loud, can he get some respect around here? Can we get an engineer in here from Pete for crying out loud? These engineers
Morty
even
also a big Luigi fan.
Do they come to work at all anymore? Somebody reset the board for Pete already.
Only one letter separates them, but they're galaxies apart. One is a true winner. One is a pathetic loser. This is DA's Champ or Chump.
Our toll-free line, 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It's going to keep you up at night. Switch to Geico and save. My champ, last night, Mookie Betts, who gets on first, steals second, steals third, and then forces an errant throw home to bring home a run in a crucial juncture of the game. Plus, Mookie Betts with great defensive plays. Mookie Betts has been phenomenal at the plate as well, hitting home runs and robbing home runs. He's just done it all, and I love when big players come up in big games, and he did that last night. Betts is your champ.
That's DA's champ.
Your chump is wide receiver of the Bengals, John Ross. He was the number 9 pick overall in the draft a couple of years ago out of Washington. This guy can never stay healthy. His rookie season, he played in 3 games. The last 2 years, he's played in a total of 11 games. The only year he played more than 10 games, he only started 10 of them. He missed another 3. He's not productive. He's always banged up. And now he's asking for a trade out of Cincinnati. By the way, a place where your young rookie quarterback is proving to be one of the best in the NFL at a young age. Why would you want out of Cincinnati? John Ross, what's happened in Cincy has been a you problem, not an organizational problem. You're the chump.
That's DA's chump. Class is now dismissed.
I just don't get it with Ross. I mean, if you're a wide receiver, aren't you absolutely in love with the fact that you could right now be playing alongside Joe Burrow? I mean, he's getting limited snaps from Zach Taylor because he's injury prone, his head's not in it, and he's not productive. And you're the one asking out? If I'm John Ross, I'm going, hey, I got a chance here with this quarterback. I got a real chance here. I know that if I work my butt off and I'm open, this guy's going to find me. He's going to be here for a while. If I'm Ross, I'm like, this is a great situation. I got to bust my butt to get back on the field. Instead, he wants a trade. Loser.
Can I also ask, why does the man own a pool if he can't swim by the time he's at 81? Why is the pool open? Why do you have a pool? You're 81. If you haven't learned to swim by now and you own a pool, why do you have a pool? It doesn't make any sense.
It's a fair question. It's really hot in Tampa, St. Pete. I could understand wanting to cool off. But if anything, I guess you would just have that really shallow pool where you just can, like, lounge in it. Like, you put a chair in it, and it's only up to, like, your ankles or your waist. I mean, if you can't swim, you're right. Why is there a pool where you can actually swim in it at your house?
Well, there are other Vitals, right? I mean, he's got to have grandkids or something, so other people swim in his pool.
But would you have a pool that you couldn't swim in? Wouldn't you have a pool that you could swim in?
I mean, my guess is he walks into the pool and, like, stands at the edge where he's on his feet.
So he's just,
I guess
he's only shallow end?
Deep end? Yeah, that would be my guess, that he goes in where he doesn't need to swim, but he would jump into the deep end where he'd have to swim, and therefore he'd have DA cheering for his drowning.
No, here's I didn't a thought. Say that.
Learn how to swim. It's not like he's got to go to the YMCA bogus. The man lives in Florida. It's sweltering hot with that humidity. He's got a pool in his backyard. Get in there and paddle, Dickie.
That train has left the station. He's 81 years old. He's not picking that up now, Marez.
Well, where was it 30 years ago, even when he was 50? How do you not learn how to swim at any point? He's in Florida.
Why did he not ask the Vital Ball Dome Index how important it would be to swim if you live in Florida?
Man, that I can't trust this guy in Duke, North Carolina. He can't doggy paddle.
This bit has been, it's been rough for years, and it's even rougher now. It's rough when broadcasters get this old. It's rough because they lose it off the fastball. You know, when you're a broadcaster, your mind has to work quickly, and you have to be decent with words, and you have to be charismatic, and all of those things are just harder when you're older. So old broadcasters are tough, but at least Musburger still got a command of the language. I mean, Dickie V's just doing Dickie V from 30 years ago, but it's a slower, worse, less funny version of it.
The Rays in seven. The Rays in seven. The Rays in seven.
It does kind of feel like somebody has to show up to his house every night, find the remote with the big button, show him what channel the Rays are on, sit him down, get him his pudding, make sure dad's okay. Okay, you're gonna he wants to talk if they win. You want to film him.
Couldn't then, you just do a lesser Dickie V version if you're Dickie V? Do you need to do the full 100-mile-an-hour Dickie V version?
I don't think he knows how to do a lesser Dickie V. Dickie V is Dickie V.
By the way,
I think this is really who he is, too.
But Dickie V was an NBA head coach. He wasn't always a cartoon.
You weren't in those locker room meetings, D.A. My assumption is Dickie V always had a little energy.
Could you imagine going into an NBA locker room? All right, baby, we need the diaper dandies to stand up right now. Look at this. It's the Vital Ball Dome Index. Power forward, you're going in there. You're going to score 32 points in the second half. Oh! That's not how he was. He was actually a credible coach. But then he turned into a personality that was selling Hooters and Papa John's and ESPN Big Mondays, and then suddenly became this where you can't, he's just doing a video about the World Series, and it's like four bad jokes.
But are we playing a Dickie V World Series video if he's not doing Dickie V? You know what I mean? So maybe he just needs that Dickie V.
That we need the Dickie V?
Well, I don't think anybody cares if Dickie V puts up a video when he's going back to coach Dickie V going, hey, really happy with the Rays here. They've gone out and hustled. This is an interesting series with the Dodgers. No, you need Dickie V being Dickie V for the video to ever be interesting.
Do we need him to threaten to drown? Is that part of the Dickie V bit?
No, but I would talk to his writers. I would talk to his writers and say, you guys need to fix something here. You know, and by the way, the Rays got to be paying him for this, right? They got to be paying him for the
post-game
video.
I think they're probably only paying him with swag. He's got that Rays jersey. They probably send him all types of Dickie V swag. I mean, I guess that's true.
They can
you say we
players.
Need Dickie V. Do we need Dick V? Do we need Dick V? Do you need Dick V? Does he need Dick V?
I'm jumping right in that pool after it happens. I am jumping for a swim, and I can't swim.
When you put it that way, probably not. But I think the Rays need Dick V. I think that's exactly what's
going
on.
Do they? They've been just fine without him. He hasn't been in the stands this year?
I guess it's true they had a cardboard cutout of him. I mean, but we clearly – what did we do the last 10 minutes without Dick V? I don't know. I think the world needs a little Dick V.
Bogues, do we need Dick V at this point?
No, and that's the sad part of this. Like, just tell the man it's okay to be old and, like, quiet and sit in his lanai and
okay
watch the game.
It's okay to be quiet. Yeah, that's the thing. It's okay to be quiet.
We're good without Dickie V now. We're there. We're done. We know what he would say. We can think of it in our head. It's okay. He can just relax. He's, what do you say, 81 years old?
Yeah.
Just take it easy, dude. You don't need to do this for us anymore. We're okay.
Especially, it's not college basketball. We're not even asking you to do the college basketball bit. You don't need to do Dickie V about the World Series.
Guys, we see it all the time. The moment people stop doing that, they're dead. Dickie V needs to be Dickie V to keep that blood pumping. The moment he stops being Dickie V, we're talking about a six-month timeline here. No, he's got to keep doing it.
Okay, so you're saying that Dickie V needs to be Dickie V for Dickie V, not because we need Dickie V.
Right. I think the more you think about DA, I'm sorry. We know this happens. People talk about it all the time. They retire 6 months later, dead. They need something to live for. And Dickie V being Dickie V, that's the blood's pumping. You don't need Dickie V basically drooling on himself in the corner of the room telling him to be quiet.
So this is self-preservation for Dickie V.
Yes. Who needs to face their mortality like that? You basically are asking his family to wheel him off into the corner, throw on the Rays game, and just be quiet. The man wants to live. Let him live.
Okay, but I'm going to say this. You are a total sucker for the old school, nostalgic, something from your childhood, so much so that you like Chris Berman with a blonde toupee saying whoop for 2 minutes once a week.
And look at him go. I love it. I live for Monday night. I can't go to bed until I see Chris Berman.
And even you, after we played that clip, groaned and was speechless.
It was uncomfortable because the jokes were really bad, but I also am with him that he should be doing it. Look, that's my boy. We see him on my Twitter. That's my boy. He wants to be there. He wants to go nuts. I'm sure at 84 years old, if I'm lucky to see that way and I'm still making fat jokes, people are going to grumble and go, we're still doing this bit with Mraz here? We get it. Oh, my goodness.
Well, they're probably already saying that. We're still doing the fat jokes, guys.
Of course. But, the moment you wheel me off into the corner and tell me to be quiet, that's it. You might as well dig my grave. That's it. Dickie V needs to live. Let him live. Stop it. We just want to rush old people into the grave and end their careers. Day Chris Berman passes away, we better weekend at Bernie's him up at Monday Night Football at halftime. You better do it. Get him up there with some string, some sunglasses. He's got to whoop his way through that. We don't care how dead he is. I'm sorry. These guys need to live.
Whoop.
Rumbling, bumbling, stumbling. Rumbling. The Raiders.
Right now,
if you're watching at watchda.com, I'm basically playing a puppet and somebody's moving my mouth.
The frozen tundra.
I am so uncomfortable with what's going on right now.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. Howdy, howdy, howdy.
This is some day for your impersonations, DA. You've been locked in on three different people. Dead Chris Berman, Dickie V, and Morty the Lemur.
Never a discouraging word. Whoop!
Frank Caliendo's toast after today's show.
Berman starts breaking out all the references from the 90s. Sorry, Barry Word's not playing in this game, Berman.
Shh, do it!
Barry Bananas Foster.
That's James Conner. Boomer, that's James Conner.
to well-dressed Amani Toomer.
Yeah. Sorry, Darius Slayton Boomer.
Oh.
So bad.
Let Dickie V live. So bad.
Let Dickie V live. No one's trying to put him into the ground. I'm just saying. I mean, geez, these videos are painful.
Isn't it ironic?
Hey, isn't it ironic? It's rain on your wedding day. Oh, it's the Rays and Dodgers in the World Series. Isn't it ironic?
Isn't it ironic?
Dickie Morissette. All right, AB has our headline this morning. Mr. Bogues, what do we got?
We got the Dodgers getting the full Clayton Kershaw experience and the full Mookie Betts experience in Game 1 of the World Series last night. Their Hall of Fame lefty stifled the Rays for 6 innings in Arlington while Betts was in the middle of an 8-run outing. Kershaw loves his right field.
Yeah, Mookie's pretty special. I mean, he just, you know, he does things on baseball field that not many people can do, and he does it very consistently, which I think separates him from a lot of guys.
Betts had 2 hits, including a homer, and he walked. He stole second, then third, then scored on a grounder to first to fuel a 4-run fifth inning, all while Kershaw kept the Rays to 1 run, just 3 base runners while striking out 8 over 6. So the Dodgers draw first blood 8-3. They'll start Tony Gonsolin tonight against the Rays and their southpaw Blake Snell. First pitch comes shortly after 8 Eastern. Commissioner Rob Manfred said pregame, owners want to keep expanded playoffs, but maybe 12 or 14 teams instead of the 16 this season. They also like putting a runner on second to start extra innings. The union have to sign off on either one of those things living past this season. Dolphins head coach Brian Flores confirmed last hour that Tua Tagovailoa is their starting QB moving forward. Flores said Tua has gotten better and more comfortable in practice, telling them he'll be fine in actual games. Flores says he's also going to apologize to his team for the news getting out before he had a chance to talk to them directly.
Isn't it ironic?
It is almost time for that impressive NFC East to be on full display on Thursday Night Football. The Giants and Eagles, a combined 2-9-1 as they meet in Philly tomorrow night. Eagles right tackle Lane Johnson expected to try and play through his nagging ankle injury. Giants swat out Sterling Shepard officially, designated to return from IR. That's his next step for playing tomorrow.
What are you laughing at?
The weekend at Bernie's Bourbon was the best and worst bit we've ever done, ever. Like, his family would crush us for this, and you're holding your mouth up your arms. I'm going to be picturing that the rest of the day.
What, weekend at Bourbon's?
Weekend at Bourbon's, propped up with the sunglasses on the set. Past is 3 minutes. Carry Chris in. Here we go.
Here goes the Bucks at the new sombrero.
It's terrible, but it's so funny.
No longer the Bay of Pigs.
Oh, man.
Is that your first job?
Chris
ESPN?
Berman needs to make it through the day too. Or we're
oh my god!
Forget
oh man!
It.
Oh, if 2020
the tapes.
If 2020 takes Berman, we're toast.
We're
total toast.
The state militia history.
Remember the time we killed Chris Berman? Yeah. When we come back on CBS Sports Radio.
Remember the day before John Kincaid took over the morning show on CBS Sports Radio?
Right, Dickie V, you want ironic Jody Mack hosting tomorrow morning because of our permanent show.
Yeah, Dickie, you want ironic? The DA show jokes about your death and then it happens.
Isn't
that's
it
ironic.
Ironic?
Oh, terrible.
Really bad.
I'm okay. Not going to read soccer news, so whenever you want this, take it back.
All right, when we come back here on the show, we've got your poll question of the day and your epic fail. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, analytics is just a term that's kind of thrown around a lot.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
All right, so our This Day to Mothership History segment was Mraz 4 years ago claiming that he was preparing to go to the gym on an NFL Sunday, which of course never happened. So we asked you guys today, have you ever gone to the gym during an NFL Sunday? 67% said no, which is a shocker that 33% of you, a third of you, have gone to the gym on an NFL Sunday. A new survey of 2,000 Americans found that going to the gym is becoming more and more obsolete due to the pandemic. 3 in 4 says it's easier than ever to maintain their fitness routines in the comfort of their own homes, which really blows up Mraz's theory about why he's put on so much weight during quarantine. 75% of Americans say, you know what? I could actually say healthier than ever at home these days. Americans exercise an average 25% more during quarantine than before. Again, a shocker. Let's get to your epic fail of the morning, boys and girls. And I'm sorry, but on Thanksgiving, the peanuts and holidays, peanuts, they just get me depressed. Here's your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
JJ After Dark, John Jastrzemski, loves peanuts. I mean, loves them. Has t-shirts and ball caps and backpacks and golf sweaters and all types of things about the peanuts, and I just don't get it.
What, we're going to go Google Gaga?
They are the most depressing cartoon I've ever watched. I grew up with Looney Tunes where people, you know, they just tried to blow each other up. I mean, I grew up with, you know, Bugs Bunny trying to kill Elmer Fudd, who's trying to kill Bugs Bunny, who's trying to kill Daffy Duck, and Wile E. Coyote getting blown up and pushed over edges. And then I turn on Peanuts around the holidays, and it's this dreary music.
What kind of a Thanksgiving dinner is this? Where's the turkey, Chuck?
And no trees have any leaves on them, and Snoopy is dragging his ass up around the yard. And Linus stinks, and the kid Pigpen has all the flies around. And I'm like, this is the most depressing thing ever. I can't understand the teacher. Wah, 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 wah. Oh, Charlie Brown. We're going to pull the football away from him. Everybody hates Charlie Brown. I'm like, this is supposed to be a kid's TV show? This is a cartoon?
Where's the mashed potatoes? Where's the cranberry sauce? Where's the pumpkin pie?
Give me Elmer Fudd getting a gun. Blown up in his face. Give me a break. And so, frankly, to make my Thanksgiving less depressing when it comes to Texans and Lions and Washington, Dallas, it's good that there's no peanuts around my house. I'm glad I don't have Apple TV, so I don't have to be subjected to the depression that is the peanuts.
You were kind of rough on Charlie Brown, weren't you, sir?
Rough? Look at this.
On Thanksgiving around the holidays.
It's accurate, right? The color is so dreary. The storyline never makes any sense. All right, so we found a win for you on Thanksgiving. It's no more peanuts on network TV.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Our Ask the Pros question brought to you by O'Reilly. Think O'Reilly for all of your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly. Better parts, better prices every day. Brian tweets, the weekend at Berman's bit had me dying in my cubicle. Hashtag keep the man alive. Nicholas tweets, the dead Berman Dickie B, the Dickie V bit made me spit my drink out of my windshield and I had to pull over. Hashtag whoop. Mariana. Bogish deserves an award for getting through the update with Mraz and DA giggling through the whole thing. Fightin' Amish tweets, you bus drivers running over Dickie V over and over as me in stitches this morning. Good stuff, kids. We're not trying to run over Dickie V, just pointing out that it's getting a little tired here. But look, we want Dickie V around for a long time. We want Chris Berman around for a long time. Mraz specifically really enjoys their bits, their comedy, their shtick. Are you subscribing to Apple or ESPN Plus for the new primetime?
Yes, watching. I just took my sister's login, but yes, I am.
Okay, so you're still watching it.
Yes, of course.
When we come back tomorrow morning, we'll have game 2 of the World Series to talk about, and Evan Washburn of the NFL on CBS is going to join us as well. He's got the big one, Steelers and Titans. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Thanks to Pete the Body Bellotti of the Wheels of Steel. Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA, who has a very damning gif going on right now on Twitter. And thanks to Andrew Bogish on your headlines. We'll see you tomorrow. The Mothership disconnects.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.